Enthused by great compassion, you taught the Dharma to dispel the perverted views to your Gautama Buddha and make prostration. As Nagarjuna has stated in the precious Kalind, and we all the sentient beings, if we have to attend enlightenment, of course we have to rely on the bodhicitta mind, then the wisdom realizing emptiness and the great compassion. And as it is stated in the precious Kalind, we all are similar in terms of wishing to have happiness and not willing to undergo suffering, which is similar for all beings and animals. And if we are someone who is looking for a long-term goals, then the term suffering, and we have to investigate what are the temporary causes or the immediate causes that gives rise to suffering. And therefore, the suffering with also it causes, and also the imprints, the latencies. Someone who has eliminated all these afflictions and the quality of which is known as the truth of cessation. So such a kind of quality, or at a state where all the sufferings with its causes are eliminated. So if we get an idea or understanding that such a kind of cessation is possible, and if such a cessation exists, then we are generally similar in terms of not willing to undergo suffering and so on. So if such a state of cessation, which is free of suffering, then we have to attain, we have to work hard to achieve it. And in this life, of course, we had a human rebirth. We also met the Dharma with our spiritual teachings. We hear the teachings, and also we have the opportunity to contemplate and think about and study. And when all these conditions are assembled, if we do not practice or if we do not work hard, then there is no other time. And if you are born in another time, which is called the Dark Age, where there is no teachings of Buddha, but even at a time when the teachings of Buddha exist, but if you are born in such a kind of place where the teachings of Buddha do not reach, then there is nothing you could do. And even if you are born in a place where the teachings of Buddha exist, and if you do not have a human rebirth which can listen and which can practice all the teachings, then even if you have such a human rebirth and all the qualities, but then if you do not have interest or if you do not pay attention, then there is nothing you could do. Or either you are constantly under the influence of the worldly affairs and worldly luxuries. And of course now, of course, we are born in age where there is teachings of Buddha is there. And also we are born in someone called the central place. Central place here actually refers, there are two ways to say that. But at currently we can consider our place as a central region, because there are four Vinaya tradition holders, so which are generally the two bhikshus, bhikshu and bhikshunis, and upasaka and upasakis. So this place may not be central region according to the land and the border as described, but in terms of the facilities that we have for studying Buddhist studies and practice, we can consider this as a central region. And so with all these qualities, if we really concentrate and work hard, and if we make effort, then definitely it is possible to do something. And as I used to say, to stay for 3 years retreat is something like what the Chinese always tell us. It may be helpful in some way to generate kind of rejoice or so on. And if someone who is already trained and someone who has the karmic realizations, of course, the 3 years retreat may be helpful. other than that, for other people, when we speak about the three eons of accumulations, and when they're also distributed, the first eon of accumulation to the first two parts of accumulation and the preparatory part, and also to the uncontaminated seven parts and the three normal learning parts, or three uncontaminated parts, the 8, 9, and 10. Then we speak about the three eons of merits accumulation, and which is very wonderful and which is very vast. And we all sentient beings, as I said, we are all similar in terms of wishing to have happiness and not to undergo suffering. And if you contemplate and make further, it is what is stated in the precious garland, as I recited before. And at now, when we have met with a greater Dharma teachers and the teaching, so if we contemplate and think in the right way, there is potential within us to accumulate millions of merits even in one moment. And if someone has a bodhicitta with the foundation of the great compassion, of course, within a moment, we have the potential to accumulate tremendous amount of merits. And what is the purpose of doing all these accumulations? The purpose here is because the enlightenment or the completely, fully enlightenment here, when we refer to as completely and fully, it is in order to benefit the all sentient beings. So therefore, if you have generated a very brave heart, a strong heart, that you wanted to work hard, even for these three eons, to accumulate merits in order to benefit sentient beings. And it is also similarly presented in the precious garland by Nagarjuna, that we have to have a lot of merits accumulated in order to attain the signs and the marks of the Buddha. So therefore, as presented in Nagarjuna's precious garland, that the accumulations are different varieties and very vast. And if we have the intention to go from the higher and higher, better and better rebirths, then we have to think about the suffering. And within the suffering, there are two, the one related to physical and for mental. And the mental suffering is more severe, and which we need to eliminate at any cost. And once we are born in this samsaric world, of course, we undergo a lot of suffering, of the three sufferings and so on. But if you generate a mind that you wanted to dedicate to benefit all the sentient beings, and even you may not have a great understanding of emptiness, but just with a slightest idea about the emptiness, and with such a motivation, even though you have a contaminated body, which is the truth of suffering, but even in such a state of body, we can generate a mind to benefit all sentient beings. And it is the timing and the period is not important. So our intention should not be that I have to attain enlightenment at any moment very soon, but we need to develop a sense of courage within us that I will work hard for the as long as it takes in order to attain enlightenment. If you, at the starting point, if you think that you wanted to attain enlightenment at a very soon place, then later you will feel tired. And as I said before, that the enlightenment state is very difficult. So from the beginning itself, you have to have a very confirmed and a certain state of mind that you will work hard, even though how long it takes. That's what I felt. And Nagarjuna has stated that in order to attain such a kind of enlightenment state, we have to work for the cause. And as the Dignaka state about that, Dignaka used the term became, so which has a very significance that we become enlightenment only by studying and only by studying the texts and being on the path, you know. So the term became here has a very significance that it doesn't, the Buddha or the state of enlightenment is not the same thing from the beginning. by our transformation course, it became the soul. And also for the path, of course, the path has to be have all the qualities which has all the necessary criterias. And the as presented by Nagarjuna, the first, the bodhicitta mind, and also for developing a bodhicitta, the awakening mind, the great compassion has to be the root of that. And with these two as the foundation, then we need to generate the wisdom realizing the absence of dualism or emptiness. And if we think the wisdom realizing emptiness from the intelligent person's point of view, even for them to generate a good refuge in the three jewels, of course, they need to realize emptiness. And it is stated that in order to even generate a small doubt to the teachings of Buddha, we have to have a basic understanding of the reality, which is the emptiness, and which is again the dependent origination. And if we introduce the teachings of the Buddha through the dependent origination, of course, it is the very nice, best way to introduce. And nowadays, many of my friends and my scientists, they really feel great sense of joy towards the teachings of Tibetan origination, which is also based on the explanation such as Tibetan on the cause and effect. Of course, as of now, the mere designated by conceptual thought is something difficult for them to digest. So this is the main method, skillful means to attain enlightenment. And as stated in the by Chandrakriti in the supplemental middle way, and to attain the ultimate truth of cessation, we need to walk to the path that leads to cessations. Even though the phenomena, they do not have their own intrinsic nature, even at a pinch of the dust, but due to being the dependent origination and the empty of being inherent existence. So with that at basis, we need to walk further. And as Lama Tsongkhapa stated about that, when we generate an understanding about emptiness, so it also eliminates the two extremisms. And even one after generating the wisdom realizing emptiness, then later we also need to generate great compassion towards all sentient beings. So here Chandrakriti is explaining and teaching us the importance of having both the skillful means and the wisdom realizing emptiness simultaneously in order to pursue further. And later Chandrakriti concludes the sixth chapter with that we need to have the wisdom realizing emptiness and the great compassion as the king of the swans rose towards the ocean with its herd. And also there are six treatises on the teaching of dependent origination by Nagarjuna and the other commentaries by Aryadeva and so on. And then there is Chandrakriti's supplement to Madhyamaka. Then there is the clear words and so on. And even in Tibetan, there are hundreds of scholars who have written commentaries on these texts and who have studied by listening, contemplation, and meditating on these great texts. And as for now, Lama Tsongkhapa has 18 volumes of texts. And if we speak about the teaching of Lama Tsongkhapa, then we need to study the 18 great volumes of Lama Tsongkhapa. And within those volumes, the major ones need to be studied further, and which need to be studied on a daily basis. So if we practice in this way, generally when we recite as a daily prayer, the eight prayers, like Samanda Bhadra and so on, during the 13th Dalai Lama's time, there is one singer, and he has a little bit of similar, so we normally call it the Unishta, something protruding from his head. And he reads the Diamond Cutting Sutra a lot. With loud sound, he recites the Dojichoba, but I don't know how much he understands the text. And his text has become very black and worn out by reading it for a long time. And there are many people who always give the Lamrimchama text, and the initial pages were quite worn out by reading. But the later part of the special inside chapter part is always left without touched. So, of course, the one which is difficult that we do not understand, we need to read and study further. And I told you before, last year in Nagpur, I think about 2 years back, there are a few Buddhist communities settled in Nagpur, and they requested me to give a teaching. And I have an Indian friend, he's a scholar, he's also a Buddhist practitioner, and he's a very close friend of mine. And I also met him once, and also gave some introduction. And he said that was a bit too difficult for them to understand. So they requested me to give a more simpler one. And I was a bit angry, and I told them, you need to learn what you do not understand, the difficult one. So even for the scholars, I'm saying that whatever the part which you do not understand clearly, you need to make more effort towards those portions of the subject. And if you contemplate and make effort further, then you will find some result. So therefore, if you continue to read that part of the text which you already knew, then there is no more knowledge that you gain out of it. And Lama Tsongkhapa has written the commentaries on the texts of the Nagarjuna and the Masters. So those commentary texts by Lama Tsongkhapa are really wonderful in terms of their literacy. They're very accurate. And I used to say that I think it's not boasting. Lama Tsongkhapa is something like a second Nagarjuna in terms of his writing, the way his thoughts. And as stated in the Destiny Fulfilled, that we should not be studying the partial or the gross meaning of the text, but we need to thoroughly study all the texts with each details of the verse and sentence. And also thinking about the content and the meaning of the text, and not coming to a final conclusion before investigating and making a lot of investigations. And first, the wisdom based on listening to the teaching, then wisdom based on contemplation, and ultimately through meditative wisdom. And of course, through the meditative process, we gain a lot of experience by making effort or by effortlessly. But ultimately, the main important is we need to generate a genuine understanding within us, that which is derived again or backed by the wisdom. So therefore, we need to investigate the meaning or the content again based on reasons, by the application of reasons. And if we generate a kind of understanding based on reasoning, then of course it will be a very strong understanding. So therefore, before the meditative process, first we need to have the wisdom realizing, wisdom based on contemplation. And even for contemplation and thinking, first we need to listen to or read the text. So therefore, this is the main order of studying. And those texts which really focus especially on the difficult parts of Nagarjuna's texts are very important. And most of the Lamrim texts in the initial stage, they are very extensive. But when it comes to the chapter on the special insight, they become more concise. But the Lama Tsongkhapa's writings are not like that. When it comes to the special insight chapter, it becomes more and more elaborate. And when the content or the subject becomes more and more difficult, Lama Tsongkhapa's explanations and the comments become more extensive and more detailed. And if you read the Bodhen Tamji Khenpo's writings, I've read most of his writings. I've written the commentary on the Diamond Cutting Sutra, but most of his writings and commentaries were just a little bit commentary on the words, but not very deep meaning. So it's, of course, an object of refuge, so but not very detailed. We have a saying that in Amdo, that if you haven't seen, you must ask Bodhen Rinpoche, because Bodhen has written most commentaries on the four tantras and so on. So therefore, his writings are very extensive. So if you do not see, you must ask Bodhen. But if you cannot make a decision with respect to some details, then you must ask Lama Tsongkhapa. And this saying, I think, is very true. And today we have to continue from the Lamrim text. We're reading from Tibetan text, Shamar Lamrim, from page 225. We're on the third outline, of the process of dying and how the rebirth comes after that. And this also have three subheadings. The first, how does the death process actually arrive? And after that, how does the intermediate state of rebirth arrives? Then after that, how does the next life comes? There is a small caption here. The dying process or the state of dying arrives when the lifespan of this life comes to an extent. And even for some cases, the lifespan may not have exhausted, but due to conditions and certain reasons, we may also arrive at the dying state. And for the causes, of course, we normally describe it as the causes that brings its own result within this life. And within that also, there are many positive and the negative karmas. And of the many, the karmic imprints that are on your mental continuum, one which is the heaviest in terms of its imprints, the negative imprints or the positive imprints, arises when the 8 or the 9 interdependent links of attachment and desire adds to grow or to arise that karma. And here there is also difference with respect to the view of the different schools, and the Vaibhashika school has a slight different way to explain that. The Vaibhashika school states that any kind of the ripened results, what we call, that any kind of actions that you performed and the results also ripen at the same life and do not... It has to end in this life and it doesn't go further. But whereas the Sutantra school and the so forth states that the result may happen or start to arise in this life and can continue to next and other lives also. And when the person is at the dying state, it is very important that we have to always say something pleasant to his eyes. We should not be saying unpleasant things to him, which may not be received by him in a nice way. So the persons who the dying persons can be of different states in terms of generating the mind of negative and positive at the time of dying. And the first one, the one who dies with a positive mind, is whether they can remember by themselves or whether he or she is helped by someone else to remember their masters and also their faith and devotion towards the three jewels, and also and also ask him to make dedications and prayers. And here, when we speak about someone who passed away with a positive mind, of course, the different philosophical tenets have a different way to say that. And in the compendium of Samajaya, in the compendium of the in one of the texts, it is stated that the ultimate state of mind at the time of dying is always neutral and cannot be of any positive, whereas the Vaibhashika school holds that the subtle mind, even at the time of dying, can be also a positive mind. So at the time of dying, one can, as stated before, remember by oneself or by one's friends, help him or her to remember about one's devotion towards the three jewels and so on, and also by thinking or dedicating the merits so that he or she will gain a good rebirth in the next and subsequent lives. So in this way, one can generate a positive mind at the time of dying. And there is also some signals when the person is at the state of dying, that if he is going to, he or she is going to get a higher realms of rebirth, then he will see as he is walking through a path which is very lighted, illuminated path. And here, when we speak about the intermediate state of rebirth, whether they can be reversed, once you are in the intermediate state of rebirth, whether you can reverse from that state is not, has also different views in terms of the Vaibhashika and other school. And also when the person, when he is at the dying state and when he travels the process or the journey to the next intermediate state rebirth begins, he may walk through, he may appear or imagine as he is walking through a path illuminated by lights, and a lot of things will appear beautifully, something like he is seeing a kind of a dream, and also there won't be much sufferings. And as I explained before, the one who is already passed away, if one someone dedicate, someone who has a relation in terms of their relations, in terms of their family relationships, or sharing the same kind of the objects or the belongings, may make difference if they dedicate or do prayers for that, prayers for the deceased. So this is the presentation with respect to someone who passed away with a positive mind. And the one who passed away with a negative mind are the ones who at the time of dying develop a lot of attachment towards their wealth, their possessions and so on, and they die out of great attachment and anger, attachment towards one's loved one and the family members, and greater anger towards one's enemy and so on. And with such a motivation or such afflicted minds arises at the time of death, with that negative imprint in the mind, the strong negative imprint that you have accumulated maybe millions of years before arises, which leads you to the next lower realms rebirth. And as for the signals, you may appear as you're walking through a dark place in a forest. And you may appear as a kind of dream with a lot of unfavorable images. And also there are a lot of sufferings in that process. And we've also seen that those persons, especially works in the slaughterhouses, at the time of dying, they can see the images of the sheep and the other animals that they killed, and they're coming to them with wailing and different sounds. and they also feel as if they are burnt and also cut lively by them. So this is the presentation with respect to someone dying with a negative mind. And the third one is someone who passed away with a neutral mind, neither positive nor negative. Those are the persons who actually at the time of dying, any strong kind of mind, whether it's positive or negative, do not arise. And a neutral mind, it's a kind of a neutral state. And this kind of the negative and the positive arising of the mind is actually at the initial stages of the process of the death. But when we reach the very subtle or the very end of the completion of the death process, all the minds are said to be neutral. Even though in one's life you might have done a lot of accumulations and engaged in a lot of positive deeds, but at the time of dying, if your mind becomes negative or if your mind becomes too much attached to someone, then the whole life's positive actions will not be of much benefit or help in order to bring you a good rebirth in the next life. And similarly, if someone who is constantly accumulating a lot of negative karmas in terms of slaughterhouses, butchers, and so on, but at the time of dying, if he is able to generate a positive mind, whether by himself or herself or being assisted by someone else, then there is a great possibility that he will get a good rebirth in the next life. So whatever the positive or the negative mind of state arises, it all has to be before the subtle process, the subtle mind process of the death, completion of the death process started. And next one, once one completes the process of dying and he passed away, then immediately after that, the next rebirth, which we refer to as intermediate state of rebirth, comes into being. And the intermediate state of rebirth, or Bhardava, is said to be someone that has all the limbs and the body parts functioning at the very moment of being birthed. And the image of the body of the intermediate state of rebirth is said to be quite resembling to which kind of the next rebirth he or she is going to take. And also the intermediate state rebirth also have some powerful power of magnification, so that he can travel from one place to another by flyings, and it's not even disturbed by the mountains or even not blocked by the heavy rocky mountains and so on. And it can travel uninterruptedly from one place to another. And who can see those intermediate rebirths of the state? It is said that if it is for the gods and goddesses, those ones who are similar in terms of their rebirths can see each other. And similar, it is stated that even the human intermediate state of rebirths can see for themselves. And if you developed the clairvoyance by meditative process, then you can see the intermediate state of rebirths also. And as explained before, the Vaibhashika school and other schools have different explanations in terms of the intermediate state of rebirth. And in order to stop the rebirth in the samsaric world, then we have to first eliminate the first dual interdependent link, which is the ignorance. And in order to eliminate the ignorance, one need to generate the wisdom realizing emptiness. And the emptiness has to be the one here. The understanding of the emptiness has to be as for the presented by the highest Madhyamika school. So if we do not generate such kind of the highest standard of emptiness understanding, then even you may claim that it may be a kind of a understanding of emptiness, but they may not be genuinely and may not be able to eliminate all the afflictions. So therefore, the presentation on the emptiness in the highest Madhyamika school is the supreme one, as explained by Nagarjuna. So in order to achieve such a kind of wisdom, realizing emptiness, we need to develop special insight. And the special insight is also depends on calm abiding's meditation. So both of these again relies on concentration, the training of concentration. And also the concentration is again depend on the trainings of ethical discipline. And here, in all this process, the most important is our mindfulness. And in our daily lives, whenever we engage in any kind of activities, whether they are going to the positive side, negative side, or become a neutral actions, so therefore, we need to be very mindful of our action. So to generate a good mindfulness, it all started from mindfulness practice is again based on the training of ethical discipline. So therefore, the teachings on the three trainings came. And again, all the teachings of the Buddha based on the three trainings will be again summarized or contained in the three teachings or three baskets of teaching. So after completing the statement, the presentation on the bardo, next is about the rebirth. And as the rebirth has, as we covered last time, there can be four different stages of rebirth. And the process is explained very detailed in the Abhidharma text. And the next is having how to attain liberation, how to be on the path to attain the liberation. So in order to present that, the two main outlines. The first is how we have to eliminate our continuous rebirth into the samsara. And the second presentation with respect to by what kind of the meditation or by accumulating what kind of path can we be able to eliminate our continuous rebirth in samsara. And the first one, as Padova, the great meditator, has stated that our beginning, our circling to the samsaric world, actually there is no beginning. So we have been here since beginningless time. And in terms of our rebirth to the samsaric world, we are similar, our numbers are even similar to the past Buddhas. And the Buddhas have realized the nature of suffering and they've eliminated the ignorance and thereby they become enlightened beings. But we are constantly under the influence of ignorance and we are circling around the samsaric world again and again, not being able to eliminate the causes of being reborn in samsara. And the best state to eliminate those kind of ignorance and so on is the human rebirth. And the human rebirth, again, we have such a wonderful human rebirth with all the leisures and the advantages. And in terms of His Holiness' comments on the telling lies, which is counted as one of the four defeats for the Vinaya ethical discipline, can arrive to masters like me who have a throne, who sits on a throne who has a title of the name of a master. So for the common monks and the people, it is very difficult. But for the stealing, as per the Vinaya tradition, it is quite likely that the monks or any people can have that practice. I've heard that monks who are, I've heard that the monks who are in overseas, so under their monk's robe, they have some silk variants, silk clothes or something. They wear silk clothes under their monk's robe. So I think that is against the practice. So they have the title or the name of a monk and the tulku. So they have to be very careful in their what they wear and what they do in their daily life. And the second is, in order to be liberated from samsara, we need to identify the causes that brings us to the samsaric world again and again. And the initial causes are the ignorance and the karma. And among these two causes, it's very important to first destroy or eliminate the ignorance. And in order to destroy the afflictions of ignorance, we need to rely on the antidotes. And the antidotes again consist of the three trainings which are presented in the three baskets of the teaching. And among, it has to start it within the three trainings. We have to start by the trainings on ethical discipline. And with the ethical discipline training as the foundation and the base, then further our training of concentration and meditative trainings will arise. And the stages of the practice of the three trainings is actually very well presented in the sutras. And there, the ethical discipline and the concentration and the wisdom are said to be in order that one brings another. We're reading from page number 233, Tibetan text. So the first of the three trainings, which is the training of ethical discipline. So the first, the text presented here about the benefit qualities, benefits of abiding by the ethical disciplines, abiding by the guidelines presented in the text on ethical discipline. It is said that the ethical discipline are the root of all the virtues, and also the ornaments of all the teachings. If someone has a sense of a feeling that you are a bhikshu, a monk, very strongly at all the time, then even at night when you dream, you tend to have that feeling for yourself that you are a monk. Continue reading from the text. Ethical discipline can be also the main weapon towards destroying the afflicted emotions. And His Holiness comments that for those who are in the monastic rule, such as the monks and the nuns, they have to be very careful about their commitments. But generally, for all people, whether you are lay or a monk, we have to be abide by the 10 positive actions, especially the killing and telling lies and so on. As we generally presented the 10 positive actions, which refrain from indulging in the 10 negative actions, the three concerning the three doors. And these are again the commitments and the advice with respect to taking refuge to three jewels. So once you take the refuge to three jewels, you cannot indulge in the 10 negative actions. And for those who have to be abide by the rules, we can generate such a kind of sense for yourself that if I do this, of course, it will be a great disrespect to the teachings of the Buddha and the teachings of Vinayas. And also I may get a bad negative result. So therefore, I cannot indulge in this kind of activities. That is thinking from your own side. But then there is another second way also to practice that. So that if you indulge in such kind of negativities, then other people may abuse or criticize you. And when you also think about the Buddha, as presented about becoming the valid person or reliable guide, then of course you can generate a sense of understanding for yourself. Other than that, if you do not understand the qualities of Buddha, it is very difficult. So the Buddha is a combination of the four kayas, or the four enlightened beings. And within the four enlightened bodies, the Buddha, who is the embodiment of the wisdom body, then if you realize that, then you will generate great faith towards him. So if you just think about the Buddha as a historical, someone who became enlightened 2,600 years ago, then there won't be much affected. I have a friend who is a nun, Bichune, and she has written many books. And in Thailand, she said that at one time, she has an appearance or a vision of the Buddha surrounded with all her, all his disciples and so on. And she told me that, as presented in the lower vehicles teaching, that Buddha once they attain nirvana without remainder, then the continuity of the mind and the body cease after that. Then she told me that this presentation may not be right, because I have had a vision of the Buddha, all his disciples. So therefore that presentation may not be right. And he also went for a pilgrimage to one border place with the Avalokiteshvara statue in the front. And it was actually not clear on the photo that I've seen. And he was praying before that statue with the Theravada's monk style, with dress. And at that time, a white light beam radiated from the Avalokiteshvara state. It was in the daytime, and he was bowing in front of the statue, and directly on the head, the light beam, a white light beam, strikes on his head. And I've seen that page. So if you understand the four enlightened bodies of the Buddha, then of course you can give some explanation to that. But other than that, as it is presented in the Vaibhashika school about the Buddha and all do not exist anymore when they attain the nirvana without remainder, where it is said that the continuity of the mind and body cease, then it is very difficult to explain such kind of event. So therefore, as presented in the Sanskrit traditions about the four enlightened bodies, the four kayas, is very important. The first from the Sambhogakaya Buddha, from the Sambhogakaya Buddha's enlightened form, which gives manifestation to the different forms of Buddha. But then if we look from the other lower Vaibhashika school, that first the Lord Buddha as an ordinary person like us, then from the path of accumulation and path to seeing, then just from one meditative posture he became an enlightened being. So if we have to take those presentations and those assertions as it is, it's very difficult to explain many other things. So therefore, when the teachers give the teaching and the explanation with respect to Abhisamaya Alamkara, then we need to explain it in a very well. After studying the Abhisamaya Alamkara text, and when you see the image of Buddha, then if you realize the Buddha as the embodiment of four kayas, then that is the purpose of studying the text. Other than that, even after you study the Paramita studies, and if you do not have any difference, then it won't be of much use. I think later when I met Genyamala, and he was about to come to South India at that time, and he told me, Genyamala told me that now we need to find a new method to give the teachings. So our traditional way of imparting the Buddhist philosophical teaching is not the very suitable or not the right one. That's what he told me. And I've also told the Rinpoche's, and if there is a time, I wanted to meet the abbots and the ex-abbots, and also the teachers, the masters who give all the teachings here. And I'm sure that many masters are here who give the teaching to the monks and scholars. I wanted to meet them all and discuss about the method of giving teaching. The spiritual master is not someone who sits on a throne all the time. The one who really gives you the philosophical studies at your class is real and your master. So therefore, the spiritual master also has a responsibility to lead the right way, to guide them in the right way.
Sorry. Zoran is talking about if he really needs four. There's a beautiful design of a parrot on that object. So in one Thai monastery, in a shrine, we could look through some kind of a telescope or some kind of a camera inside a room, and what we can see is dead bodies of decomposing. So in the a little boy fell on the ground as he ran. So the there is a body which is just a dead body, and then a series of bodies which have decomposed, turning into blue color, and then decomposing and rotting. These different stages of decomposition of the body, a dead body, are shown there. And so these are meant for... So they have used modern technology to watch these pictures of the different stages of decomposition of the body in order to meditate on the impermanence and death. And also to meditate on... So with regards to the repulsive nature of our body, these are given in Abhidhamma Kosha and so forth. So when you do mindfulness of body, so thinking about the filthy nature of the body with all the different types of impure substances, the 37 or... And then... And so mindfulness of body leads one to meditate on the suffering nature of samsara, and the mindfulness of... mindfulness of feelings or sensations helps to us to meditate on the origin of suffering and so forth. And so when it comes to looking at time, we cannot say we cannot pinpoint a certain moment as being present, because half of that time is gone and half is yet to come. And so in this way, if you meditate on the mind itself, being not being able to pinpoint where the mind is in the present or past and future, by meditating on the mindfulness of mind, you actually are let into the cultivation of cessation. And so we have this sense of an independent or substantially self-sufficient self, and therefore meditating on self, the mindfulness of selflessness, or mindfulness of the mind, leads us to that. The phenomena leads us to this, the understanding of selflessness, and the. So with regard to meditation on the repulsive nature of things, the text mentions Abhidhamma Kosha, and so we need to study. If we have some doubt about something, we need to study about them and be able to see things from various angles and have a very broad understanding and perspective on the things. And so even modern subjects could help in this. So just as we rely on, we take medicines to cure ourselves. We take medicines, we rely on medicines. Likewise, we need to meditate on the different points of practice in order to overcome our negative emotions. So without knowing anything about what the antidotes are and how, I mean, you cannot apply those antidotes to overcome our negative emotions. And so saying that you are going to apply the antidotes without really knowing how to go about with that is a matter of laughter. And so use your mindfulness and introspection to apply the antidotes as well as one can. And then you should also make prayers to your lamas for blessings and recite mantras and so forth. And there are practices of propitiating Dharma Palas, Dharma Protectors, and asking them to fight against our own negative emotions. In Drukpa Khyentse's case, instead of throwing the torma that was meant for exorcism or something, Drukpa Khyentse, instead of throwing it outside, he threw it at the lama who was performing the ritual. And why he did that, when he was asked, he said that this is to counter the lama's negative emotions, this the grasping itself. And so when I do this kind of ritual during initiation and so forth, and I also use mustard seeds to drive away the evil forces, first outside, and then I also throw on myself to counter my own negative emotions, such as the self-cherishing attitude and the negative emotion, the afflictive emotions of the grasping at its true existence. And so you could also recite mantras . So if you are obsessed with leave alone, applying the antidotes, but you actually obsess with them, you cannot be doing Dharma practice. The text says that there are people who pretend to be to have clairvoyance and also could have signs of having accomplished their spiritual feats and so forth. And so these people are revered more than those who are pure in morality. So this is a sign of being at the called the bottom of our degenerate age. So once when Joe Atisha was staying at Yerpa, and so there was somebody who was known to have some clairvoyance, but actually he was possessed by some spirit or influenced, he was under the influence of some Mara. And he came to Atisha, and Kutun requested Atisha to subdue this spirit. And so Atisha put some on his sides, different things like the beans. And then asked about his own past and future life. And so the spirit was able to give the answers without any hesitation. And then Adisha drove away this spirit, the non-human spirit. And then he asks, what is in my inside my cheeks, right and left cheeks? And then the person was not able to give any answer, but sweated. And he was subdued. So one shepherd was said to have been influenced or blessed by a Naga named Lukargil. And then because of that, he was able to levitate and show miracles and teach the Dharma. And Lodzen Rinchen Tsangpo, he came near Lodzen Rinchen Tsangpo. When Lodzen Rinchen Tsangpo came near him, and he dropped on the ground, and he showed his own true dominion in the shepherds in shepherds' robes. And so those who's practice the strength of their practice are weak, they would be influenced and possessed by these spirits and so forth. And so, as I said, in the three principal aspects of the path, when it comes to practicing the bodhicitta, which Rinpoche gives the meditation on the sentient beings being carried away by the four currents of the four powerful rivers, and being bound by self grasping and then being within the cage of the grasping at true existence. And this particular verse for developing compassion could be related to that of the cultivation of determination to be free from samsara, renunciation. You should switch the word of for bodhicitta to renunciation. And the word mother beings, switch it with oneself. And there. So we are, with regard to this Shamar Lamrim, His Holiness just began the path pertaining to the great beings. And so we switch to liberation in the palm of your hand. How you leave on the rebirth at death and are reconceived in another. This has three sections. What happens at death is first, your lifespan may run out, your merit may run out, you have not rid yourself of danger. The sutra on the factors contributing to death mentions nine such factors for death. These and others can kill you. Your dying thoughts activate the karma that will throw you into the next rebirth after death. The activators of this karma are craving and clinging, and this is what happens. You might feel, I'm going to be separated from this body and cling to your present body. Craving includes things like desiring heat when you are to be reborn in the hot hells. The object of this triggering process is your most powerful karma, be it black or white. If your black and white karma are equal, then the triggering object is whichever of these two types are more familiar, is the more familiar. If the two types are still equal, then whichever type of karma is carried out first will be triggered. The time when this triggering takes place is while in the mind, while the mind is still active and still has the coarse form of recognition or attitude or an either virtuous or non-virtuous phenomenon, that is faith, compassion, detachment, anger, etc. And you can still recall such things by yourself or can be reminded of them by people. So, when coarse recognition ceases, then, and while your dying thoughts are subtle, your thoughts are neutral, and you are unable to remember any virtue or non-virtue. If your dying thoughts are of faith and are of faith and so on, your virtue will be activated. It is therefore vital to pray with a virtuous thought when you are dying. When your dying thoughts are on the point of being activated, you could be a Dharma practitioner who continually creates virtue. But if you get angry, etc., when you are dying, you activate non-virtuous dying thoughts and you go to the lower realms owing to the ripening effect of past non-virtues. And the same principle would apply to a sinner who continually sins. At this point, one will be going to either the upper or lower realms. If one is going to the upper realm, one's body heat dissipates from the lower part of the body and collects into the heart. If one is going to be going to the lower realms, the opposite happens. Heat dissipates from the upper reaches of the body and collects in the lower. Also, you can know which of these two will happen by such signs as the degree of discomfort the person experiences during his fatal illness. Discomfort during the illness refers to when a major part of the body fails. Some people hallucinate when they die. For example, they may imagine being squashed under bricks of tea or by people. Gajapama Rinpoche told how in Lhasa he saw a steward of a central government die. He had stolen tea. When he died, he had hallucinations and thought he was being squashed under boxes of tea. When an official from Tsang province died, he said, "I am being crushed by many people," and he felt that life in the state of... And he left that life in a state of terror and so on. This also happens to people who have performed virtuous actions. Once a beggar who lived by the side of the road had visions of a palace and white light rays when he died. Pabongka Rinpoche also told how an old woman in Chusang who had recited Om Mani Padme Hum a lot had virtuous visions when she died. Such signs are but a prelude to death. The way one achieves partho is next. Like swinging the arms of balance, your present incarnation and simultaneously with your adoption of the physical forms of preliminary incarnation, this refers to the phantom that resembles the aggregates of your next rebirth. The next rebirth or incarnation, which wherever it may be, is preceded by this phantom. Some people claim that the dead live in the partho with appearance and costumes they had when they were alive, and that so we are in the section next is the way one is conceived and reborn. So His Holiness was commenting on this quotation at the end of page 479, where it says, "Because this exists, that will occur. Because this has arisen, that will arise. Similarly, because of ignorance, the compositional factors, and so forth." And he was relating the Asanga's three conditions with these. And then next is ignorance. And so with regard to ignorance of the 12 links, there are two types. But within the 12 links, there are two types of ignorance. But the first ignorance, as initial ignorance that we refer to, is the ignorance about the reality of how things are. So regarding ignorance, this is the root of going round in samsara. We are ignorant about how to apprehend selflessness with our wisdom. And so the antidote to the two types of ignorance are such that by thinking about law of causality, it serves as an antidote to the ignorance about law of causality, which makes us create non-meritorious karma. and therefore non-meritorious, that kind of ignorance is averted by understanding the law of causality. And ignorance about the reality of things is averted by the antidote, which is understanding the reality as it is, and leading that understanding of wisdom leads to liberation. And so in the in Kamala Shila's commentary on Tatusam Graha, which is he mentions that, and by thinking about and reflecting on the law of causality, we create causes for higher rebirth. And by thinking about the designation in terms of dependence, by designation, how things are designated, we could create the lead ourselves to definite goodness. And so the teaching of the Buddha is meant to serve sentient beings. And in order to do that, the Buddha taught the dependent origination. And so whatever teaching the Buddha has given, as Tsongkhapa says, whatever teachings you have given are based on the dependent origination. And so His Holiness has read about ignorance and compositional factors on page 480, and consciousness. Now we are at this. So if I just read from ignorance down, this is the root of our going around in samsara. We are ignorant how to apprehend selflessness with our wisdom. When we perceive person or phenomena, we hold that they have a self or that they can be established by their nature. Ignorance is our perverse manner of apprehension that contradicts the cognition of primal wisdom. This is like being benighted and blind. There are two forms of ignorance: ignorance of cause and effect, and suchness. So, with regard to this consciousness, it is in the Mula Madhyamaka Karika, when it goes through these living imprints on the consciousness, there is mention of keeping some thing as when you take loans, keeping something with somebody as and with regards to the competition factor, ignorance motivates the competition factor as if this were its job. The aggregates manifest in our next reincarnation, and this is the function of the competition factors. Thus, we are motivated by the ignorance of being blind to the law of cause and effect, thereby creating unmeritorious karma. Or we are motivated by the ignorance of being blind to this mode of existence of things, and we create unmeritorious or immutable karma. All these types of karma are composition factors and consciousness. This refers to two consciousnesses: the consciousness at the time of cause and the consciousness at the resultant state. The first type is the consciousness immediately after the instinct or latency of the compositional factor, that is the karma that has been imprinted. The second type is the consciousness immediately after conception into the next incarnation. In illustration, suppose that motivated by ignorance, you take a life. When you commit this karmic action or compositional factor, its instinct or latency is imprinted as soon as the karmic process has been completed. This is the consciousness at the time of course. By virtue of this karma, you are conceived into an incarnation of as a hell being. Immediately after this conception, the situation of your consciousness constitutes consciousness at the time of the result. As non-virtuous karmic action is capable of throwing one into many rebirths in the lower realms, each non-virtuous karmic action apply the same principle to meritorious karma and so on. The instinct of these karmic actions enter the consciousness as oil soaks into sand or the ink of an official seal soak into the paper. Craving and clinging are able to activate these latencies, which then become potent enough to effect the rebirth. Effect rebirth, and then next name and form. In the case of rebirth from a womb, the name link is the four aggregates of feeling, recognition, composition factors, and consciousness. The form link is the blood and sperm in their first stage of development, etc., in which the consciousness has been placed. Such links, where they apply, are called the link of name and or form. Or form. The six senses is the next. Once the six senses, sense faculties, the eye, ear, and nose, tongue, body, mind, have formed, this link only applies as long as one still cannot discriminate between objects. Whenever a certain object or faculty and sensory consciousness are present, the physical and mental faculties are said to exist from the period of initial fetal development. With the example of transformational rebirth in the rebirth in the two inferior realms, the desire and form realms, the name and form links and the link of the six senses occur simultaneously in the form of realm. There, in the formless realm, there are only one, only name link and the link of mental sense. There are no links of form or of five physical senses. And then contact is next, followed by feeling and the craving. And then becoming and rebirth. So regarding craving, craving is wanting to not to be separated from happy feelings. It is also wanting to be separated from suffering and clinging to this separation. We can also crave that our equanimity does not decline. Feelings are said to serve as a substitutary cause for the development of craving. This should be understood to mean that ignorance is present and that contact then serves as a contributory factor for the feelings that then occur, which in turn produce craving. So when we do not have ignorance, we may still have feelings, yet craving will not develop. And then next, grasping. Our craving increases, so we desire the object and become attached to it. There are four types of grasping. Grasping at the sensual is being attached to the objects of the senses. Grasping at views is being attached to all evil views except the view that equates the self with the perishables. Grasping at ethics and modes of behavior is being attached to inferior ethics and modes of behavior. And so, his Holiness is reading through the part which is in English on page 480 under the section Aging and Death, 485. So, to summarize, the fastest we can complete a set of ling is in 2 lives, and the lowest in 3, and the slowest in 3. It is not possible to do it any faster or more slowly. Each link gives rise to the link that follows it. So all suffering, rebirth, aging, death, and so on, is experienced as a cycle. So while we follow the link that resulted from a single karmic action, we may develop various other sets of links in their course phase. Aging and death derive from rebirth. The competition factors derive from ignorance, and so on. So one link follows another, and ignorance is therefore fundamental in causing the wheel of samsara to turn. Nagarjuna says, 2 of them derive from 3. 7 of them derive from 2. From the 7, the 3 occur again. That is the wheel of life. And so it turns and turns. So in other words, the 3 delusions delusion links give rise to the 2 karmic links, and from these come the 7 links of suffering, and from these 7 links come the 3 delusions links, and so on. The cycle is repeated, and the wheel of life turns without interruption. This is the revolving of the wheel of suffering. The 12 links can be dealt with in another order. If we practice a path that is able to put a stop to them, we impede the compositional factors link. By preventing the ignorance link from occurring, this will put an end to all the suffering intervening before aging and death. And to summarize, the 12 links can be brought under 3 types of links. So, with regard to developing the understanding of emptiness, merely to have that understanding, you do not need single-pointed concentration. But here the term lekpar or well or excellently is used, and so that could make sense to develop this insight. Insight into emptiness, you need single-pointed concentration. So then next section is and to summarize, the 12 interdependent links can be brought under 3 types of links: the karmic link, the delusion link, and the links of suffering. Ignorance, craving, and grasping are the 3 delusions. The 2 karma links are the compositional factors and becoming, and remaining links are the 7 links of suffering. As Nagarjuna says, the first, eighth, and ninth are delusion. The second and tenth are karma. The remaining 7 are suffering. So the first line of verse discusses the 3 links of motivation. The second line, the 2 karmic links of karmic actions of body, speech, and the body and speech, that is the compositional factors and becoming. The third line, the links that one will experience. You have developed renunciation when, as a result of your meditation on the general suffering of samsara and 12 dependent links, you yearn to be liberated from samsara as a prisoner yearns to be freed from prison. When you develop a mind, the mind with such yearning for liberation, you will then want to train in a path leading to freedom. And therefore, actually, certain the nature of the path leading to liberation has 2 sections. The sort of birth that will stop samsara and the sort of path that will stop regarding the first, you have thought about the drawbacks of samsara. The nature of samsara is that its environment is impermanent and perishable, just as the image of the moon on the water, whose surface is being blown by the wind, does not stay still even for a moment. Samsaric happiness and wealth are like the shadow of a hooded cobra, great risk for little profit. Once you see that any of the five kinds of rebirth are an interrupted torment, uninterrupted torment of suffering, just as a people in prison or in a burning house do not wish to remain there in those places and want to be freed from them, you will develop unforced thoughts of wanting to be liberated from samsara. You investigate the cause of samsara. There are two causes, karma and delusions. When you understand out of these two, the delusion, the root ignorance, you will want to work hard at some means to defeat them. The rebirth to have is the optimum human rebirth. And now that we have gained an optimum human rebirth in which we can follow the three high trainings and other wholesome endeavors, we must turn away from samsara. Geshe-potava said, when you wandered so much in the past, samsara did not stop by itself, nor will it stop by itself. You must stop it. And time to stop it is now that you have gained the optimum human rebirth. In other words, there is no better rebirth to have than this one. The sort of path that will stop samsara, we should sever the root of samsara. That which must be extirpated is the root of samsara, the ignorance of being blind to suchness, the instinctive form of grasping at the I. When we do not sever this and cultivate other antidotes instead, and to do it, it merely dulls the few delusions a little, but does not destroy them forever. Other virtues cannot affect this instinctive grasping at the eye. Only thoughts directly opposing its manner of grasping can stop it. The wisdom that understands selflessness realizes that the eye does not exist by way of its nature. This wisdom is therefore directly opposite to the thoughts and manners of grasping that take the I to be established by its nature. You, therefore, need the wisdom that understands selflessness in order to extirpate the instinctive grasping at a self. When you do not have the wisdom and work hard at other virtues, it will only bolster your grasping at a self. The virtues will be unable to harm it. To develop this wisdom properly in your mind stream, you need the following. You will to develop this wisdom properly in your mind, you need the following. You will not develop it without the high training of single-pointedness. So His Holiness's earlier comment was regarding this sentence. You will not develop it without the high training of single-pointed concentration. His Holiness adds, you will not develop well or excellently without high training of single-pointed concentration. For example, you need the two things when you chop a tree trunk, a sharp axe and a steady arm. If your axe isn't sharp, it cannot turn. It cannot cut into the trunk. If your arm is steady, the axe will not fall on the same place on the trunk. Or, to see a mural at night, you must have a bright water lamp that is not disturbed by the wind. The wisdom that understands selflessness is like the sharp axe or the butter lamb illuminating how things are. Grasping a true existence is the trunk to be cut. Properly seeing the mode of existence is like the steady arm wielding the axe. You must develop in your mind stream stable single-pointed concentration that is free of subtle internal mental distractions, like the Badalam not flickering in the wind. In order to develop in your mind stream single-pointed concentration devoid of internal mental distractions, you must free your mind to gross external distractions. That is, you must first take up the higher training of ethics. And so in all my deeds, as the eight verses of mind training says, His Holiness was commenting, that may I prove my mind, and as soon as the... And as soon as these negative emotions arise, may I confront them and avert them. And so, and to summarize, the sutra request by Brahma, as quoted in Sangha's Shravaka level, tells us the things to have a very good stable root, rejoicing and pacified mind, and the Arya view. Things not to have, the views of the sinful. That is, in order to develop the antidote of grasping at self, the special insight that possesses the Arya view, understanding the true mode of existence, emptiness, you must first achieve mental quiescence. And if you do not follow the high training of ethics, you will not have all the requisite causes for mental quiescence. From Nagarjuna's letter to a friend, it says, if your hair or clothes should suddenly catch fire, give up putting them out. Strive instead to stop reincarnation. No other aim can be as great. Though pure ethics, wisdom, and concentration achieve peaceful, subdued, stainless nirvana, a state immortal, ageless, inexhaustible, beyond earth, water, fire, wind, sun, and moon. The things to be practiced in this medium scope are the three high trainings. So I would have to discuss all three at this point, where I not going to teach the great scope Dharma topics. However, this is only a teaching on the path shared with the medium scope, not a teaching on the actual medium scope path. So I will discuss two of the high trainings, single-pointed concentration and wisdom, in the mental quiescence and special insight sections of the great scope. That leaves only the high training of ethics to be discussed. This is the traditional way of teaching. As it says in Nagarjuna's letter, like the earth supports the animate and inanimate, so ethics was said to be the foundation of all good qualities. In other words, ethics is most vital because they are the basis of all good qualities. They are the root of the Buddha's teachings. Ethics are most beneficial if one keeps them, but there are enormous drawbacks if they are not kept. The benefit is in the keeping of them. The fundamental thing that determines whether the Buddha's teaching will continue. So His Holiness has reached the end point of this section, and now on to the path of the great scope, beings of great scope. So let's switch to Shamar Lamrim. So third, with regards to the training the mind in the stages of the path of the great beings, there are three. So first is showing that the bodhicitta is the only gateway to Mahayana. And then second point is how to develop that mind, bodhicitta, the altruistic mind, and then how to train in the practices having developed that mind. And regarding the first one, as explained before, one sees the faults of samsara by meditating on the faults, and then trains in the three higher trainings. And so if one trains in the three higher trainings in order to be free from samsara, one may be able to reach the the liberation of the Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddha. But they are partial abandonments and realizations. And therefore, one is only able to serve others only partially. And they are urged by the Buddhas at the end to enter into the Mahayana. And so those intelligent ones, when you develop a genuine sense of wanting to be free from determination, to be free from samsara, one should abandon the attitude or the intention of the lower paths, the lesser vehicle, or lesser path, and enter into the Mahayana path. And so this is worth doing, it says. And then within the Mahayana, there is the perfection vehicle and the resultant tantra, sacred tantra vehicle. So whichever system or path, system of the path you follow, in both the cases, the only doorway or gateway to enter the Mahayana path is bodhicitta, the altruistic intention. And so once the bodhicitta is developed within the mind stream of someone, that person is becomes a Mahayanist. And so if you give up or forsake that path, you fall from a Mahayana. And so, therefore, the bodhicitta delineates whether one is a Mahayanist or not. And then there's a qualm raised, but isn't it said that the entrance to or the gateway to Tantra is initiation? And so with regard to bodhicitta, there is it is complemented by two aspirations, aspiration to help others and aspiration to become a Buddha for the sake of others. Now, in order to aspire to liberation, we need to know what enlightenment means. And so in order to for that, we need to also understand what liberation is. So the serving others, the so serving others or fulfilling the interest of others means leading them to liberation and omniscience. So in order to fulfill that goal, you think of becoming yourself liberated or enlightened for their sake. And so this is with regard to the actual development of bodhicitta, which has three parts. It says training the mind in the developing, in fulfilling the interest of others, and the training the mind to fulfill one's own interest, and the result of having trained. And so with regards to development of the bodhicitta, the more powerful technique of developing bodhicitta is the technique of equaling and exchanging self and others, which are mentioned in the Nagarjuna's Bodhicitta Vivarana, and the Ratnavali, which in turn is followed by Shantideva's Bodhisattvacharya Avatara. And so for me, this is more powerful technique. But of course, the different people have different temperaments and dispositions. And so with regard to the training to fulfill the interest of others, it has two paths, accomplishing the basis and the actual development of full, the actual generation or fulfillment of developing that wish to fulfill the others' interests. And within all of these two, there are two into the first section. And so one should do one's best to. In terms of developing the equanimity without getting attached to those who are good to do good to you, and without becoming or angry or hating others who do bad to you. And so this the first part of the two is developing the equanimity towards sentient beings. So the bad thoughts actually drive one another, or they are all linked to one another, such as the grasping at some permanence also helps in attachment and so forth towards near and dear ones and so forth. So this section that His Holiness is commenting on is how one should cultivate the mind relating to all sentient beings in general. And so it says that we have this attitude of holding on to those who are near and dear ones as permanently helping us, and those who are our enemies permanently harming us. And therefore, one should reflect on the uncertainty of relatives and friends or family members and enemies and adversaries, as it was explained before, in terms of the suffering being of samsara being uncertain. And so with regards to affection also, there are those, there are two types. One which is tinged with attachment, other, the other which is not tinged by attachment. And so it's important to differentiate between these two. And then next section is developing the attitude of seeing all sentient beings as being dear to you or attractive. So with regards to responses, with regards to the statement that there is a past life, because we can see animals with instinctively going after milk or taking grass and so forth. And so sucking on the mother cows, I mean the cows, the mother's milk and so forth. I have some qualm about it. It could be biological, I also I think, that if we have to go for milk because of being instinctively having the imprint from the past life, then why don't the bucks would not suck milk? So this could also be biological. So this was actually this reason to prove the past existence of past life is stated by Bhav Viveka. So it says that the fact that the animals, as soon as they're born, go after the mother's milk, I mean, sucking on the mother's milk, is because of their acquaintance with this sucking milk in the past lives. So it's easy to understand that, it says. And then the consciousness, and in this life, right at the birth, an instant of birth, is also come from the past lives. So, with regards to the cosmology, for example, in the text there is mention of 3,000 world systems and so forth. But today, through scientific exploration, because of the technology, advancements in technology, there are other suns as well in other galaxies. Some of the suns are much bigger than the sun that we see. So if we look in the night, if we look in the sky, we sometimes call them stars. So those which have no light of their own will not twinkle, or whereas those which have self-light or light of its own, their own, then they twinkle. And because of the distance, they look very small. And then there are suns as well, which are very, very far away. So in terms of light years, in terms of the light traveling in the space in one space in 1 second, it's much faster than the sound. And so light travels very fast, but the source of light, the source which is the star, the sun itself, that star itself may have ceased already, but the It is said that we could still, the light from that star which has already ceased, which is no more there, is still traveling, and therefore, in cosmology, the modern astronomers and cosmologists say that we can see those lights of the stars. And in our text, there is mention of the world systems as numerous as the grains of sand in the Ganges River. And so, the more powerful the telescopes are built, the people build these kinds of telescopes, they can see more of the universe, more galaxies and so forth, stars and so forth. And so, with regard to the description of the evolution of the world, it is said in our text that the previous world system has ceased, and then there is an evolutionary phase. There is a phase of emptiness, and then from that the evolution starts. And so from a broader perspective, a broader angle, we can say that our traditional texts have this described is tally with the signs. And so so if we can focus on the look at things from a broader perspective, it's much better rather than focusing on some smaller ones. So we'll stop here. So his song is stopped at the point where the text deals with the next part is developing the sense that all sentient beings have been once mother.